If the road is easy, the destination is worthless. Welcome to the Regimental Vox, a podcast dedicated to all things Warhammer and wargaming in general. I am your host and Vox operator for the evening, Caleb Meyer. It is Tuesday, December 17th, 2019. This is episode 60. And, I know I just recorded this past Thursday because, you know, last week's schedule got a little fucked up. But rather than, like, waiting a whole nother week or something like that and, like, you know, skipping a week or some dumb shit, I wanted to try and keep on top of it. So, I did realize that last episode, I didn't go over any of, like, the new announcements and stuff, but at the same time, part of the reason for that was, A, trying to, you know, keep it a little bit shorter and stuff, and because of, like, redoing the episode, but B, there's nothing to fucking talk about, as far as, like, new releases. I shouldn't say nothing, there's just not a whole lot. And, you know, admittedly, we experience this drought, like, every single year. Christmas comes around, GW tends to put out, you know, like, some box sets and things of that nature. But realistically speaking, they're not usually putting out a whole lot of new product right now. You know, that's their goal is to try and capitalize on what they have, not take risks. You know, just trying to put out, you know, push more current products and stuff. That's not to say there's been nothing new. You know, Slaves to Darkness has been released recently. You know, Blood of Baal, not that terribly long ago. And, you know, there's just not a whole lot of new product otherwise. You know, it's come January, we're going to see the new Sisters of Battle, like the actual multi-part kits and all that shit coming out. But yeah, otherwise, GW, for the most part, has been pretty silent, with one major exception, which we will go over in a little bit. So, anywho, you know, as always, starting off the episode, though, before we get into the nitty-gritties and whatnot, what's new in my neck of the woods? Not a whole fuck of a lot, since, you know, Thursday. I mean, literally, just not a whole lot. I did manage to bash my face in pretty good at work. If you follow the Facebook page, you'll notice I put a picture up earlier of my face. I had my head tilted one way so that you couldn't see the, you know, the scabby gash thing on the other side of my nose. It's not pleasant. I took a tire to the face. It nearly ripped my jewelry out of my nose, and it nearly ripped it out. Didn't rip it out all the way, but it came pretty close, and it did manage to bash the jewelry in to the outside of my nose, cutting it open, and also on the inside of my nose, from where it just tore through pretty good. So, yeah, so that was fun. Other than that, yeah, I mean, you know, didn't manage to do any gaming or anything like that. I have been working on building a bunch of shit. I finally finished up my Bone Reapers as far as building them goes. I just had to throw on a handful of swords and the heads on a bunch of the Mortec Guard, and that was it, you know, then they're done. I did finally build the Sloppity Biopiper I got for my birthday from my lovely fiance, and I've started working on building up my sisters. So so I've been busy in the hobbying department a little bit and stuff. I definitely, with this new year, I know I say this to myself every year, but every year I do admittedly come closer to my goal of, you know, setting a New Year's resolution of getting on the hobby track and, you know, like, sticking to it. And lately I've been trying to pick up some steam. I've been trying to, at minimum, an hour a day on the hobby in some capacity, be it, you know, building, painting, this podcast, you know, so on and so forth. But, I just have not, you know, I'm not stuck to it 100% in the past couple weeks, but I've actually been pretty good about it, all things considered. And, I definitely feel like I'm picking up steam with it. So I'm hoping, like I said, 2020, I'm going to buckle down and, you know, I'm going to stay on the hobbying track. I got a lot of stuff to build and paint. I've been thinking a lot about my ad mech. I haven't really done anything with them in a while, you know, for 40K there. And I'm afraid to, ever since my cat knocked off my project box and shattered a shit ton of it, I've been nervous and afraid to touch it, to be perfectly honest. I don't know. So we'll see. I really need to buckle down and work on them. Because I don't want to just be like, well, fuck it, I'll just sell them cheap, or some shit for somebody who wants to fuck around with it. Because I don't want to get rid of my ad mech. But that was admittedly my initial inclination when it first happened, was just say, fuck it, slash and burn, sell it all for like $50 so that it's out of my hair, and then I will rebuild my ad mech at a later time. But I knew then I would not be getting back into 40K for a long time after that. But I haven't played 40K in a long time. I haven't played 40K since before that stuff all broke. So, that's not entirely true. I did a little bit with some demons, but I haven't played it much at all since. So, but that's about it as far as like what's new and exciting, quote unquote. That I could think of right now off the top of my head. Now, as far as news and stuff from GW and the wargaming world at large, once again, not a whole lot. GW just has not put out anything crazy new. With the exception being is that we did finally, this week, we got the biannual Age of Sigmar FAQ update. The way they handled this has been a little they actually started some of the FAQs were out yesterday morning, and then if you went to different languages you could sometimes find some of the other FAQs or whatever, but it wasn't until the middle of last night while I was at work that the rest of the FAQs came through. As of yesterday morning, the only FAQs that I had access to were the base sizes, the General's Handbook one, and the Magikin one. Which, okay, Magikin, good. That's actually useful to me specifically. But like the General's Handbook one, very much so specified, make sure you check all the FAQs for the following things. It was a shit ton of battle tomes, because there were new updates to pitched battle profiles, and you couldn't access any of them. It was kind of annoying. So, but that being said, like I said, it is available now. I've downloaded all the FAQs. I've not gone through all of them, though, because I just got them this morning. But I did find last night, and admittedly, I'm like, I don't know how this was available last night, considering I could not download the FAQs. I don't know how this person got their hands on it. And admittedly, I have not gone through all the FAQs to verify all of this stuff. I have verified some of it, though. So, but just as a, like, someone just put, like, a summary together of all the different stuff they did. So, with Nurgle, you know, Magikin, all battalions were reduced by 60 points. This is on top of any previous reductions and stuff too. So some of these have gotten really cheap. Just to point out, just out of interest, in the original battle tome, that I have, just as an example here, we've got, take like the Blessed Sons. It was 200 points for the Blessed Sons battalion when the book first was released. It is now 40 points for that battalion, 160 points down from the initial go. But then, like, as far as ones that are more often used, like the Blight Cyst and Plague Cyst, those both started at 220. They are now both down to 140 in total at this point. So, you know, some interesting drops there. They also changed the wording on the Blighted Blades. So for, like, Blight Kings and Puskoil Blight Lords. But basically right now, if you roll a six when you when you roll for your hits, every hit that's a six turns into D6 attacks. Alright, that sounds cool. The way it was worded initially, admittedly, like I don't know if by coincidence I just read the rules as intended. But let me see here. As far as the original version goes, each time you make a hit roll of 6 plus for this unit's blighted weapons, that hit roll inflicts D6 hits instead of 1. And then for the new wording here, the problem is that they, for these FAQs, they don't have them named. So I've got all these fucking downloaded, but they're not named by, I got to go through and change that because I'm just like, oh man, I'm just like dicking through looking for stuff here. Or no, here we go. Okay. So, sorry, like I said, when you download it, like if you just batch download all of them, they all just have generic names like B257DU, fuck you, blah, 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 .pdf, as opposed to being like, you know, maggotkin.pdf or maggotkin FAQ 2019 or some shit like that would make a hell of a lot more sense. But anywho, the new wording is if the unmodified hit roll for an attack made with this unit's blighted weapons is 6, that attack scores D6 hits on the target instead of 1. Okay, so that was the difference. Whereas previously you could, if you had hit modifiers to boost your roll, then you could technically get the D6 even if you only rolled a 4. Say you got a 2 up on your, a +2 modifier on your hit rolls, then a 4 plus would be the D6 attacks. Now it's just an unmodified 6. So I would guess that means, too, that even if an enemy has a negative modifier, that doesn't matter. Because even if your hit roll has a negative modifier, you get 6, and you roll a 6, you get D6 hits instead. But they're D6 hits. It doesn't turn into attacks that you have to roll for. It's just, okay, now you got D6 successful hits instead of 1 successful hit. And you make a wound save roll for each hit as usual. So, but yeah, so there was that. Beasts of Chaos, the Doom Bull went from 120 to 100, Bulgors 160 to 140, Cygors 180 to 140, and Gorgons 200 to 160. In fact, rather than going through this whole list here, let's see here. Deepkin got some updates. Sylvaneth, Daughters of Cain, Legions of Nagash. Skaven got quite a few changes, that are worth checking out. There's even a new war scroll for the Plague Monks, although from what I've seen online, I don't know if that's actually in the FAQ, and it sounds like it's not even available yet. And they also changed the Storm Fiend max unit size from 9 to 6. So they didn't just do points changes there. A lot of things for Skaven went up in points instead of down. Stormcast got some updates. Khorne, Fire Slayers, Flesh Eater Courts, Gloomspike Gits, and Nighthaunt. Which Nighthaunt I thought was interesting after my rant about Lady O the other day. She went down even further. She used to be 240, I think, initially. She went down to 220 with one of the last FAQ updates. She's now down to 200. So the Black Coach actually went from 260 to 220. So that was a pretty significant drop. So, another interesting change as far as like not just points. For Fire Slayers, Hearthguard Berserkers, max unit size has been decreased to 20, but they have a horde discount of 120 for, I don't know what the block is that they do. I'm assuming it's probably 5 at a time. But yeah, it's 120/400. Like I said, a lot of new updates there in the FAQs. I just haven't gone through all of them myself yet. So, but worth checking out. So, this weekend, Kristen and I have that doubles tournament. We are still currently planning to go. Once again, I think I mentioned before, She is on call for her job the night before. So if she does get called away, then we're probably not going to be able to do the doubles thing. Because if she gets called away, she's going to be gone working for God knows how many hours in the middle of the night, driving quite some distance to go do it. And yeah, that's just not fair to her or to anybody else that we'd be playing with too. To have to, you know, cause I've done that before where I stay up way stupidly late and I'm up first thing in the morning to get to a game at like 10 in the fucking morning. And, I do poorly. I'm grouchy and you know, it's just not providing a good game for my opponent either. Then in turn, I end up failing miserably, get up, you know, and I'm just kind of, you know, just not my best. You know, I'm not only not by not providing a great game because I'm just fucking up and making mistakes left and right, but I'm sure that I'm exuding a sense of I'm fucking exhausted and I would rather not be gaming right now when I do enjoy gaming. But you know, but that can happen if you overexert yourself and shit. So, but yeah. So anyway, as far as news goes, that's about it, to be perfectly honest. So there was one other thing I wanted to mention though before we got into any meat and potatoes and stuff here. There's on Audible, there is a bunch of shit on sale right now, and while you know, I mean, that's like, I think there's 3 days or some shit left. Let me try. Let me see if I can double check how much longer there is on the sale here. Do 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 do. 2 days, 11 hours, and 41 minutes as of right now. And it's 3:17 p.m. Eastern at the moment. So, but yeah, it's, you know, there's a bunch of shit on sale, which is great. But, you know, and a bunch of Warhammer shit too. According to them, all titles are on sale. But from what I've looked at, nah, that's a lie. I've seen some blatantly not marked as on sale. So don't bullshit me. Unless technically they're saying, oh, well, you get 30% off of all books anyway, so everything's technically on sale. I still call bullshit. But that being said, they've had some, you know, stuff that's really, 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 really fucking dirt cheap. So I've snagged a couple really cheapies, you know, like a couple dollars sort of things. And I've recently listened to two Warhammer horror audiobooks. Well, one's an audio drama and the other one's an audiobook. And you know, I won't, you know, won't spoiler alert shit and everything else, so just a general review sort of aspect. The audio drama I listened to, The Watcher in the Rain, was quite good. It was very enjoyable. I still think out of all the audio dramas I've listened to out of the horror line so far, I think The Way Out is still the best, probably. That being said, as far as the overall horror line goes, the other one that I just listened to that I got mega dirt cheap again, The House of Night and Chain. Goddamn. Like... It surprised the shit out of me. It was really, really, really good. Really good. Very disturbing, to be perfectly honest, too. It was very difficult to listen to at times. Which is good, obviously. I was talking to my fiance about it last night a little bit. I was messaging her while I was at work. I was like, you know, it's hard to listen to even. But that's kind of good. That means it's doing what it says on the tin. You know, it's you're listening to horror, you're watching horror movies or whatever. The goal is to be somewhat uncomfortable. But there's that difference sometimes, I've enjoyed a little bit of, like, you know, I've watched like Saw and shit like that and been like, okay, those are kind of fun-ish. But a lot of horror movies I don't enjoy because I don't necessarily feel like they're scary. They're just mega stupidly violent in a ridiculous fashion. And they do, yeah, they're scary things of a sort, you know, like Saw with the whole, everybody's locked in and there's horrible fucking traps that are beyond imagining for the most part. Obviously, somebody did imagine it. But it quite often comes across as very contrived and just not very good. That stuff's disturbing, but in a different way. This just more fucked with my head immensely. I have to say, mad props to the author, David Annandale. Very, very, very good. And I highly recommend anybody who is into horror, and I highly recommend it whether you're into horror whether you're into, Warhammer shit and you happen to like horror stuff as well, or you're just a big fan of horror and you don't even have to know shit about Warhammer. That is the one thing that some people might listen to this or read this and argue, is that how Warhammer related really is this? And in a lot of ways, it's not. I mean, there's a lot of references and stuff like that to, Warhammer things, Chaos, Tyranids, the Astra Militarum, blah, blah, blah. But realistically speaking, you don't need to know shit about any of that shit to enjoy this story. Once again, if you're just a purveyor of horror stuff, I definitely recommend checking it out. Which I actually find kind of interesting now that I'm thinking about it, because David Annandale, also, I think he wrote In the Wicked and the Damned. I'm actually going to double check. He definitely did write In the Wicked and the Damned, but I just don't remember which story it was right off on the top of my head. I want to say that he wrote, out of the three that are in The Wicked and the Damned, I think he's the one who wrote the one I found the least interesting, actually. I don't remember the exact name of the story in there, but I didn't much care for it. I remember that much. It was very, just kind of boring and dull. The Wicked and the Damned as a whole was really good. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it was David Annandale who wrote that part. I don't remember 100%. I'm trying to find out right now which story was which. But I'm not finding it right now right off the bat. But either way, I have to say whether he did or didn't, If let's say he did, let's just go with the argument he did, because I'm pretty sure he did. If he wrote that one story in The Wicked and the Damned that was pretty meh, this is definitely massively redeeming. I highly recommend you give it a spin. That's enough of going over just ranting and raving about something without getting into specifics. Once again, I don't want to spoil anything, but now, at this point, let's go ahead and we'll take a break, and after the break, we're going to come back, and we're going to dig into more of the Codex Adepta Sororitas and the rules and stuff like that, go over some of the units. I'm going to try and cram in as many as I can in a decent length of time today. My Orc Codex review still never got finished because I spent like an hour plus discussing just the HQ choices and nothing more, so if I remember correctly. But anyway, I'll catch you guys on the flip side of the break, so stay tuned.
You're listening to The Regimental Vox. Follow The Regimental Vox on social media by going to facebook.com/TheRegimentalVoxPodcast or on Twitter @RegimentalVox. Like what you're hearing? You can help support the show for as little as $1 a month by going to patreon.com/TheRegimentalVox today.
Welcome back to The Regimental Vox. As I was saying before the break, I wanted to go over some of the Sisters of Battle stuff. But before I get into that, there was something I forgot to mention in previous episodes that I wanted to drop right now. A little community member spotlight here. A guy I know over on the other side of the state, name's Josh. He does a charity event every year, and I believe all the money goes to one of his local food banks in his area. I just wanted to mention that the very successful event, Krista and I were going to attend it. We had some stuff kind of happen in November that kind of prevented us from being able to do so right at the beginning of December like that. But, yeah, so he had 22 players between 40K, Age Sigmar, and I think he even had X-Wing going, raised $920 from the event. So to my understanding, the event kind of works where you can... You buy in, like any event, but you can purchase, you know, rather than having like stratagems and stuff like that, you can basically purchase cheat cards, essentially, but you have to use real world money to pay for these advantages that you then in turn can use in the game. So it's obviously very much so designed to be a more casual event, definitely not mega competitive because you can just pay to win, essentially. But that's not the goal. The goal is to have some fun and do some good while you're at it. So just wanted to say kudos to him on that. But while I'm at it, though, he did already post that he has plans to do a year four charity event here. I'm just trying to pull it up here. So, yeah. So as of right now, this will be in Saginaw, Michigan. It is, for Saturday, December 5th, 2020. So mark your calendars. You got a year, to do so. But yeah, as of right now, it's planning to include Age of Sigmar, Warhammer 40,000, and X-Wing 2.0. As like I said, he just recently did for that as well. So, but yeah, I just wanted to, definitely, like I said, mad props to him. I'm hoping, obviously it's a whole another year, so hopefully I could make it next year, but we shall see. And then one other note here, if you're in the local West Michigan area looking for some gaming stuff, January 1st, second annual Battle of New Year's Day, going on at Valhalla Games and Sundries in Montague. It is only a 10-person event, so you need to reserve a space for it. It's a $10 fee at the time of the event. Otherwise they do have like a membership, and if you're a member, it waives the, fees for that. So, but just something to look into. So, but anywho, let's get into some meat and potatoes, some more Codex Adeptus Sororitas talk. We've already gone over the relics and, gone over all of the individual orders and some of the special rules for the army as a whole. I mainly wanted to, for the most part, I'm just going to kind of go through this. We're going to start with like the HQ choices and stuff, and see where we end up time frame wise. I don't think we're going to get through the whole damn book today, by any stretch of the imagination. But I still wanted to do what we can. But unlike the Orc Codex, I'm going to continue to delve into this, even if I don't get through all of it today. I'm hoping that I might try to do here, since I'm going to have a little extra time in the next couple weeks with holidays and stuff, try to fit in some time between family stuff and work stuff to get this, get more content out for this. So, But right off the bat, and I'm not going to go through line by line, stat by stat, and everything else here. I just kind of want to go into some more interesting points. Right off the bat, though, I want to mention the Canonist. It's the first HQ model that's even listed on page 77 in the book. So the Sisters of Battle box set that's available right now comes with a Canonist with it. Big shock. And it's not the multi-part Canonist, also big shock. But what I found interesting about it, actually, because I just put the model together yesterday. There's a picture of me holding it up, on the Facebook page that you can check out if you want to look at my weird ass face, holding up, bare plastic. So why not? What I found interesting though, is that as far as I can tell, technically the model that you get in the box, is not Wissawig. GW has armed it with stuff that, according to the rules here, it is not capable of being armed with, as far as I could tell. So, from what I could tell, if you're looking at the actual model itself, she is armed with a power sword and or blessed blade. I mean, who's to tell you what a blessed blade looks like versus a power sword or whatever? It's, you know, whatever. That's kind of your call, I guess, to some degree. She also is holding up some sort of rod of a sort. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's probably the rod of office is the intention. Could be a null rod. But I would say it's probably the rod of office. It just looks kind of rotty and office-y, for lack of a better way of putting it. But I noticed this when I was putting it together yesterday, because if you look in the pictures, like in the book and stuff like that, you might not notice it at first. She actually does have a pistol. It's on her right hip, behind her right hip, and under her cloak. So it's just barely sticking out. But she has a plasma pistol. However, from what I can gather, reading through the rules in here, she cannot have the plasma pistol and have either a null rod or rod of office. So, as far as war gear options go, she starts off equipped with bolt pistol, chainsword, frag grenades, crack grenades, okay? She can be equipped with one bolt gun and one power sword instead of the bolt pistol and chainsword. If this model is equipped with the bolt gun and power sword combo, it additionally has a rod of office. Mind you, I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, but that's the intention, because some of the wording's a little funky, but I would say that that's exactly as it is intended. This model can be equipped with one of the following instead of one bolt pistol, one condemner bolt gun, one weapon from the pistols list. This model can be equipped with one of the following instead of one chainsword, one power sword, one blessed blade. If this model is equipped with one chainsword, it can have a brazier of holy fire or a null rod. So, for starters, that can't possibly be a null rod, because it does say if it's equipped with a chainsword, she may have either the brazier of holy fire, which she doesn't have on the model, or a null rod. But she doesn't have a chainsword, so definitely not a null rod. In order to have the rod of office, though, she has to have a bolt gun and a power sword. She cannot have the rod of office and a plasma pistol, from what I can gather here. In order to have the rod of office, she needs a bolt gun, she needs a power sword. End of story. I find that really bizarre that they made the model the way they made it, if technically it cannot be equipped, if I'm reading the rules correctly. I could be off. I could be wrong and mistaken completely here. And you can call me out on my bullshit, facebook.com/theregimentalvoxpodcast, if you have a different interpretation or something. But as far as I can tell, that's it. You know, if you want to have the rod of office, you gotta have a bolt gun, you gotta have a power sword. You can't have a blessed blade, you can't have... You could probably swap something out for a relic. You know, if there's a relic that swaps out a power sword or a relic that swaps out a bolt gun, that would probably be fine. Usually that whole replaces this thing usually works, to my understanding, as far as comboing relics with stuff like that. I find it kind of interesting that her war gear options are laid out this way, that in order to equip one piece of war gear, you can only do so if you have these other select pieces of war gear. You know, I haven't, maybe that's just a newer thing that they're doing a lot more, but I'm not used to seeing stuff like that. Like, it's fairly common that if you have a two-handed weapon, you can't replace something with a one-handed weapon thing. Like, I get that stuff, but typically there's not a, hey, if you're equipped with, you know, like in this case, if you have a bolt gun and a power sword, you additionally have a rod of office. It doesn't even say you can take a rod of office. It says if you have a bolt gun and a power sword, you have a rod of office. End of story. If you have any other combo of weapons, you do not only do you not have the option for a rod of office, you know, okay, so I should say you don't just get one automatically, like you're forced to have a rod of office. You also do not have the option for a rod of office. Same thing with the null rod or brazier of holy fire. If you do not have a chainsword, You cannot have either of those other items. Period. But those also are not forced to be taken. Unlike the Rod of Office, if you have the Bolt Gun and Power Sword, from the way it's written, you gotta have it. So, but anywho, so she's got, you know, so my Canonist that I have on my desk right now is technically not Whistlewig. Now, that being said, most people aren't going to give you shit if, you know, you are like, okay, so she's got a Power Sword / Blessed Blade once again, and she has the, my brain, and she has the Plasma Pistol. Okay. Actually, in fact, now that I'm reading it right now, one Bolt Pistol and one Chain Sword. Okay, so yeah, so you could swap out the... yes, okay. I was misreading it at first, like, wait, can she even have a Blessed Blade? Yes. So technically, she has a Bolt Pistol, she has a Chain Sword. Swap out the Bolt Pistol for a Plasma Pistol, because you can do that from the pistols list. Swap out her Chain Sword for a Power Sword and, or I shouldn't say and, Power Sword or a Blessed Blade. Done. End. So, the wording is kind of bizarre here, but you get the point. It's actually, and speaking of getting the point, as far as her points values go, that's kind of important here too. I forgot to mark this page. Let's see here. The Canonist is 45 points, not including war gear. She can have the Power Sword for 4 points, the Blessed Blade for 9, Bolt Pistol's free, Chain Sword is free, Bolt Gun is free, Plasma Pistol's 5 points. So my Canonist, as she appears, is 54 to 59 points, just depending on how you want to look at it. That being said, for the extra 5 points, if you're planning to put her into combat, the Blessed Blade is quite substantially more powerful. So with Power Sword, she would be striking at strength 3, neg 3 AP, 1 damage. The Blessed Blade would make her strength 5, which is significant. You know, there's a lot of toughness 4 stuff in the game. So, you know, Space Marines, Chaos Space Marines, Orcs. There's a lot of toughness 4 shit in the game. So having strength 5 is definitely good for dealing with a lot of infantry. Off the top of my head, there's not a ton of toughness 5 shit. And she's not going to be going toe-to-toe with a fucking knight anytime soon. I would not recommend that, except in the worst-case scenario where, well, fuck it, everything else is dead, might as well. But yeah, toughness 5 is not super prevalent, if I'm recalling correctly. But that's fine. Once again, a lot of infantry she's going to be going up against anyways are toughness 3 or 4. So she's going to be generally wounding on 3s instead. At neg 3 AP, she's going to be disintegrating most people's armor. Just their armor rolls right off the bat. Yeah, neg 3 would bring even Space Marines down to a 6 up. So, D3 damage is unreliable, but hey, it's no worse than the Power Sword. Worst case scenario, you roll a 1 or 2, doing the same amount of damage the Power Sword would have done. You know, if you roll hot, then, you know, hot damn, you're doing a lot better. So, but that being said, the D3 damage also too, unless you're going up against a lot of characters and shit, you know, does she really need that? I mean, overall, you know, she's capable of holding her own in combat, but she's not like a smash captain or anything like that, you know, at all. So, she does come with a Rosarius with a 4-up invuln save. She already has a 3-up save by default. The Brazier of Holy Fire option, is, mainly for dealing with demons. If you're within 6 inches of any enemy demon units, you subtract 1 from the leadership characteristic of those units. In addition, once per battle, when the model fires Overwatcher is chosen to shoot with, she can unleash the flames instead. When it does, select 1 enemy unit within 12 inches of the model. And if firing Overwatch, you must select the unit that is declared a charge. against it. Roll 1d6 on a 2-up. That enemy unit suffers d3 mortal wounds. If they are a demon, they suffer d6 mortal wounds instead. So it's just a one-shot deal. I don't personally foresee myself taking this too terribly often. If you're facing off against a lot of demons, then yeah, you might want to, but you know, situational, I would say overall. She also has Lead the Righteous. Reroll hit rolls of 1 for attacks made by models of friendly order units whilst their unit is within 6 inches of this model. So pretty standard rerolling 1s, but it's on hit rolls for all attacks, shooting, close combat, whatever. The Rod of Office adds 3 inches to the range of its Lead the Righteous ability. So that Rod of Office is definitely useful to have. But once again, from what I can tell, you have to have a bolt gun, you have to have a power sword. And it's not a situation, you know, it's not a situation where you can replace the bolt gun with something else off of the list. I should specify that too. You know, it does say in order to use a weapon from the pistols list, you have to replace your bolt pistol, which is not a bolt gun. So, once again, a weird choice on their part for the design. I mean, overall, if I put her on the field and say, yep, she's got a plasma pistol, she's got a blessed blade / power sword, leaving it at that, that Rod of Office, quote-unquote, in her hands is just for appearance's sake if you're rolling Whistlewig. Personally, I would rather just not have the plasma pistol. You know, that's my preference. Plasma pistols, just they're dangerous to use. You know, you could accidentally wipe yourself out with overheat. But, of course, you don't have to, you know, fire it in supercharged mode and stuff, so you don't technically have to put yourself in danger. But, you know, that's kind of half the point. And half the fun, even, too, of using plasma is that it can be a risky business. So, but, yeah, just overall, like I said, I found it rather strange that she is built the way she is. So, anyway, then we have the null rod. If this model has a null rod, it cannot be targeted or affected by psychic powers. Just flat out, just you cannot. And that's for both, you know, enemy and friendly stuff too. So if you have an ally detachment that has psychers and she's got a null rod, they cannot buff her or use any powers to help her in any capacity. But she can't be affected by the enemy either. In addition, whilst any models from your army that have null rods are within 18 inches of any enemy psyker models, subtract 1 from psychic tests and deny the witch test taken for those enemy models. You know, pretty good stuff there. If you're once again going up against a psychic heavy army and shit. Like I was saying, she's fairly capable. She has the Axe of Faith. She has the Sacred Rites. She has the Shield of Faith. You know, and combined with a lot of other stuff that she's got, she's definitely going to be a pretty standard take, I would say, in most lists. It's just going to be really dependent on your opposition, how you build her. But I think you'll see her in, you know, most Sisters of Battle lists overall. Definitely not a bad choice to take. Not the greatest choice, though, either, once again, because of some of the weird war gear layouts. You know, personally, I would love to have the Rod of Office, but she doesn't come with a bolt gun and a power sword. Plus, too, I would, once again, probably rather replace the power sword with the Blessed Blade. But, once again, too, is it that big of a deal? How often am I going to be putting her into combat? There's a lot of questions there. Then we move on here. We got Celestine. Celestine is, generally speaking, the auto take for most people, in their lists and stuff. She's definitely fairly powerful. Let me see here. Points wise, there she is, 160 points. So you're looking at over 3 times as much as a cannonist. But, you know, she can move a lot faster, you know, with a 12-inch movement. She can, it counts as, you know, jump pack / flying, so she can, you know, bounce in and out of combat, jump over enemy units, etc. She's, definitely very capable. She's got the 2-up armor save with the 4+ invuln from the armor of St. Catherine. And she's also equipped with the Ardent Blade, which I should emphasize too, she has a 2+ weapon skill with 6 attacks. The Ardent Blade in melee is strength +4, so she's looking at strength 7 hits, neg 3 AP, 2 damage. So definitely far more reliable than like the Blessed Blade. That much is a given. And strength 7, yeah, against toughness 8 things like the knights and stuff, she's still going to have a tough time with those, unfortunately. That's just nature of the beast. She's just not going to do the work that you necessarily need her to do. But, you know, it's an option in a worst-case scenario that you can put her right up in the teeth of the enemy. Especially keep in mind, too, miracle dice. You know, they are a thing in this book. And if you've got the right dice, you could pull off some pretty crazy shit. So, but yeah, having 6 attacks and 2-up weapon skill, strength 7, neg 3 AP, 2 damage, she's going to blend through, you know, elite units and stuff, you know, Primaris Marines, etc. She'll even do some work against heavier elite units and whatnot too, like custodies and shit. But she's only doing the 6 attacks. Once again, keep that in mind. She's not pumping out like a million fucking attacks a turn. So she's not going to be carving through hordes necessarily. Not by herself, you know, and that's not her intention necessarily either. She does have also her blade can shoot. It's only an 8-inch range. It's basically like a heavy flamer of a sort. Assault D6, strength 5, neg 1 AP, 1 damage. Automatically hits. So, you know, auto-hit stuff is always a nice boon. So, but she also has Healing Tears. At the start of your movement phase, you can select one friendly Gemini Superior unit within 3 inches of this model. If that unit contains a model that's lost any wounds, it regains lost wounds. Otherwise, if a model from that unit has been destroyed, you can return to the battlefield with 2 wounds remaining, placing it within 3 inches of this model and in unit coherency. And we'll actually go over the Gemini, even though they're not an HQ choice, we'll go over them right after Celestine here. Saintly Blessings, the invulnerable save friendly Adeptus Sororitas infantry models receive from the Shield of Faith abilities improved by 1, whilst their unit is within 6 inches of this model, it's improved by 2 instead if it's a Gemini Superior unit to a maximum of 4+. In addition, models and friendly Adeptus Ministorum and Astra Militarum units have a 6-up invuln save whilst their unit is within 6 inches of this model. That is a very, very nice, powerful boon there. The ability to, you know, boost up your invuln save, because most of your army, if you're rocking Pure Sisters in particular, you don't have any, like, Ministorum units and, you know, Ecclesiarchy, Battle Conclave shit. Most of them are going to have that Shield of Faith, which gives them a 6-up invuln. With her around, you are then looking at a 5-up invuln on a large portion of your army if you have it laid out properly. Because keep in mind, too, her base size, it's 6 inches from her base size, not just 6 inches from, like, the center. And it's also not 6 inches and wholly within. It is just straight up 6 inches. So that's definitely a very, very nice boost there. I'm trying to remember exactly. There's another thing right off the top of my head that I talked about in a previous episode that boosted up her, or not her, but boosted up other people's invuln saves. But I just don't remember right off the top of my head. But yeah, she comes on a 32mm round bag. Wow, only a 32mm? I would have expected her to be on a larger base, but maybe her model's not as big as I thought it was. I've never seen one in person, actually. It's currently sold out, too. Big shock there. Yeah, and then, you know, being able to give even, like, if you've got Militarum units allied in and stuff, being able to give them a 6-up invuln. 6-up invuln might not seem like much, but when it saves your bacon, it saves your bacon, you know? And being able to possibly give people a 5-6 up in, or excuse me, 5-4 up in vault save, you know, that's pretty fucking impressive. And then lastly, she has the miraculous intervention rule. The first time this model is destroyed, roll 1d6 at the end of the phase. On a 2+, return this model to play with all its wounds remaining, placing it as close as possible to its previous position and more than 1 inch away from any enemy models. So, you've got a 5-6 chance of succeeding here. You, knowing me, every game I play with Celestine, I will roll a 1. But it essentially means she has 12 wounds instead of 6. But what's cool is, since it's like at the end of the phase and stuff like that, let's say she just gets slammed with just an absolute pummeling of shots and she dies. All that excess damage is just gone. And then at the end of the phase, she can pop back up. So if somebody massively overkills her, it's just going to be a waste if she comes back fully healed up. So, but yeah, so overall, I think this is definitely, I would say she's definitely like an auto take. She has the Acts of Faith, Sacred Rites, and Shield of Faith. What's nice about her too is she is, not order specific. In fact, there's only one named character in here that is order specific. And then interestingly, she has some abilities that are not order specific, as well as some that are, kind of a weird choice there, in my opinion anyways. But let's take a look at the Gemini Superior here quick. They also have a 12-inch range, 12-inch movement, excuse me. They're not quite as capable of, as her. 2 wounds apiece, 3 up weapon skill, ballistic skill. They're equipped with bolt pistol, power sword, frag grenade, crack grenade. You get 1 by default. You can add an additional 1. They have the Axe of Faith, Sacred Rites, Shield of Faith. They jump, pack, fly, so on and so forth. They also have Divine Guardians. If your army's battle forged, this unit does not take up a slot in a detachment that includes a Celestine model. This unit can never have a Warlord trait or any relics. And they do count as characters. I should mention that too. So they cannot be targeted, unless you've got sniper weapons or whatever else. They cannot be targeted. Unless they're the closest models. So which is definitely nice, considering, they only have 2 wounds apiece and they're only toughness 3, which I should mention too, Celestine is also only toughness 3. In fact, most of this book is toughness 3. So that is one thing to keep in mind. You are not going to hold up to, your expensive units and stuff are not necessarily going to hold up under fire. So keep that in mind as you build your list here. But they are, there they are, 16 points per model, so 32 generally speaking, because when you buy Celestine, she comes with 2 of them anyways. So generally speaking, you're going to have the 3 of them, bouncing around together in a group. Because they also have the Life Wards ability. When a friendly Celestine model within 3 inches of this unit would lose any wounds as a result of an attack made against that model, this unit can attempt to intercept that attack. Roll 1d6. On a 2+, that model does not lose those wounds, and this unit suffers 1 mortal wound for each of those wounds. Only 1 attempt can be made to intercept each attack. So this is something so similar to Shield Drones, but different from Shield Drones. Shield Drones basically have this weird trade-off thing where they go, all right, I'm going to take a single wound that I can feel no pain or whatever against, and if they fail it, cool, they die, whatever, and they soak up everything else there. If they succeed, then it just gets washed out. This instead says, okay, they will take the hit, but it is a mortal wound. They do not get to take a save against this. They do not get an invuln save against this. They just take a wound. And it's a mortal wound. And it's per each thing. It's per each wound. It's not like, you can say, oh, Celestine's about to take a you know, D6, a 6 damage wound. So we'll just absorb that as one mortal wound, you know, that the other 5 damage gone. No, if you, you know, if she takes a 6 wound hit and you distribute that to the Gemini, then they take 6 mortal wounds. There's only 4 wounds between the two of them. The Gemini are wiped. Now, the extra 2 wounds, to my understanding, would go out the window in the process. So Celestine continues to stand, but the Gemini are just wiped. This is something I think needs to happen with the shield drones, to be perfectly honest. This is far more balanced than just, we're just going to eat every single, you know, big damage hit and just swallow it up and call it a day. It's kind of ridiculous otherwise. At least in my opinion, it's ridiculous. So, but yeah, like I said, you'll probably have them going around with her. They have a save of 3+, but if they're close enough to her, they're going to have a 4+, invuln anyways, too. So, you know, they're going to be some pretty tough cookies if you put them in the right position with Celestine. So, then we have the Triumph of St. Catherine. Now, I'm not going to go over all of the details from this. I went over them before in a previous episode. Just wanted to highlight once again that, A, this is not order specific. So whatever order you're rocking, you can bring the Triumph of St. Catherine. B, keep in mind that it is 18 wounds, but it is only toughness 3. It does have a 4-up invuln, and it does have the whole subtract 1 from hit rolls for any attacks. Shooting, melee, whatever. Any attack subtract 1 from the hit roll. So it's got defenses, but it is not tough. So just because it's 18 wounds doesn't mean it's going to hold up to a bunch of shit. Now, it does put out 14 attacks. Most of those attacks are going to be at strength 6, I think. Strength 5 for most of those attacks. For out of those 14, assuming it's not wounded and stuff, 14 attacks. 10 of them will be strength 5. 4 of them at strength 6. So, you know, it's, this thing's capable of holding its own, but this is definitely more of a buff support deal. You don't want to put this necessarily into the nitty gritty. If it can hold its own, but you're probably not going to be charging anybody with this weird funeral procession, at random. It is 185 points for 18 toughness 3 wounds. So once again, keep that in mind. But it's a badass fucking model, and it's got a shit ton of special powers and abilities. I foresee a lot of people building up their force to incorporate this thing. One last note to be careful about too. It is a character model, but it is 18 wounds. Therefore, it is targetable. That puts it massively in danger of some serious heavy firepower. Be prepared to pull out any and all stops to keep this thing alive. Because, yeah, it's 18 wounds, and it's 4-up invuln, subtract 1 from hit rolls, but at the end of the day, it's still only toughness 3. And there's a lot of things now that can ignore the whole, you know, negative modifier on the hit roll and stuff. So definitely be aware of that. Next we have Junith Iruta Fruta Buddha Duda, whatever the fuck her name is. Iruta. E-R-U-I-T-A. Iruta. Iruta. I don't fucking know. If you got an idea, let me know. She, if you've seen pictures of her, she's the weird-looking chick on the weird-looking pulpit thing that flies around with flamethrowers attached to it. She can move up to 10 inches. She does count as flying. And she is order-locked. She is part of the Order of Our Martyred Lady. So in order to field her, you're going to also need to have at least one detachment rocking Order of Our Martyred Lady. She is 110 points. So once again, keep that in mind too. Now, this is something, admittedly, because of all these new deals with the way they're handling mono build stuff and everything else is, you know, with the order convictions and everything else, you know, you have to be battle forged to get a bunch of the stuff. I think it's the Sacred Rites is the one that I'm thinking of. Or something. I don't remember, but I swear I'd seen something that if you had, you know, mixed faction sort of stuff, that you would lose some of your abilities. I know Sacred Rites is specifically if you're mixed with anybody who's not Sororitas or Adeptus Ministorum units. But I thought there was something else too, that if they were part of different orders. But anywho, I could be mistaken. So let's just say fuck it and I'm wrong on that. And I misread something at some point. Anyway, so she flies around. She's got two heavy flamers, which are the heavy flamers. Heavy D6, range 8, strength 5, neg 1 AP, 1 damage, automatically hit. She gets two of them, so heavy 2D6 technically. Then she's got the Mace of Castigation. Not the Mace of Castration. That would be very concerning. Strength plus 2, so she's striking at strength 5, neg 1 AP, 2 damage, flat 2. So, alright, not bad. You know, the strength 5, neg 1's a little light. But a flat 2 damage, I can't complain too much about that. She does 4 attacks. She's got Axe of Faith, Sacred Right, Shield of Faith, big shock. She's got a Rosarius for a 4-up invuln save. And then she also has Fiery Conviction. You can reroll hit rolls of 1 and wound rolls of 1 for attacks made by models in friendly Order of Our Martyred Lady units, whilst their unit is within 6 inches of this model. So, same thing as like the, you know, Lead the Righteous with the reroll hit rolls thing, but you also get the wound rolls, but it's only on Order of Our Martyred Lady. But then we've also got the Pulpit of St. Helene's Basilica. The invulnerable save friendly Adeptus Sororitas infantry models received from the Shield of Faith abilities improved by 1 to a maximum of 4 plus, whilst the units within 6 inches. So that's not just Order of Our Martyred Lady, that's just any Adeptus Sororitas infantry. And then it can explode, roll 1d6 when it's destroyed, on a 6 explodes, and each unit within 3 inches suffers 1 mortal wound. So she can do a little bit of damage if she's super close, but it's nothing like fucking mental, crazy, balls-tastically stupid. Overall, I kind of wish she was a little bit more interesting. You know, the pulpit thing just basically does the same thing that Celestine does, except for Celestine can give some people outside of Sororitas a boost. Although, yeah, and then the Gemini Superior automatically get a 2, you know, addition, improved by 2. That's a better way of putting it, using fucking words properly. So she doesn't do anything unique versus that. The Fiery Conviction is nice if you're rocking our Martyred Lady. Being able to reroll wound rolls of 1 is also very nice. So... and not just, you know, not just hit rolls. But that's spare, you know, only if you're rocking our Martyred Lady. You're not going to use her if you're not using our Martyred Lady in the first place. But if you have like a mixed army, that has both our Martyred Lady and some other, people, from other orders, they're not going to get the advantage of that. So, I think between the two, if you only have points for one and not the other, Celestine, I think, is your better choice. So, but yeah, well, like I said, not terrible, but I think for your points, cost there, although admittedly, she is a lot cheaper, than Celestine by 50 points. Plus, if you're rocking Celestine, you're probably gonna have the Gemini Superior. So realistically, Celestine is a grand total of more like 192 points. I still think that you're going to get more mileage out of Celestine between the two. I really do. Then lastly, as far as HQ stuff goes, we have the missionary, good old missionary position here. We are looking at points value wise, and forgive me for the pages back and forth thing. Once again, I forgot to mark the points page here. And so anytime I let go of it, I have to flip to get through to it. But the missionary is only 38 points, so he's fairly cheap. But he's not mega capable. Toughness 3, 6 up save, 3 attacks, strength 3, 4 up weapon skill, 4 up ballistic skill. He's basically just, you know, the weak-ass guardsman type dude. And he's armed with an auto gun, las pistol, chainsword, frag grenades, and crack grenades. Why we have both the auto gun? Well, I guess the las pistol can be fired if you're locked in combat, so there you go. But the auto gun at least gives you the ability to pick off stuff from range, I guess, to some degree. He does not have Acts of Faith, Sacred Rites, or Shield of Faith because he is not Adeptus Sororitas. He is Adeptus Ministorum. But he does get the Zealot ability, which is something missing from most Sororitas. And that lets you reroll all your hit rolls on your melee weapons. If you made a charge move, were charged, or performed a heroic intervention that turn. So, if you're going in or getting gotten in on, I don't know what I just fucking said and made up, but I apologize for my idiocy. But yeah, if you're getting into the fight or someone's coming at you, that turn, there you go. You can reroll all your hit rolls, which, you know, isn't bad considering you got weapon skill 4 up. But you're also probably just striking with your fucking chainsword at strength 3. So you're not going to about to make your enemy shit bricks by any stretch with your zealotry. You do get a 4 up invuln save, which is good because you're wearing a fucking t-shirt otherwise. The Emperor protects, but the Emperor doesn't protect your naked dumbass if you go out in the battlefield like a stupid without bringing something to, you know, protect your bacon. You also do get the War Hymns ability. Add 1 to the attack characteristic of models in Adeptus Ministorum Infantry and Adeptus Militarum Infantry units, whilst their unit is within 6 inches of any friendly models with this ability. That includes him, obviously. So he's going to get 4 attack. My dog keeps, like, freaking out in the background and stuff. Apologies if you can hear that. Then you have Lone Mission. If your army is battle-forged, no more than 1 missionary can be included in any detachment. So, unfortunately, you can't just stuff your army full of missionary position left, right, and everywhere. Word of the Emperor, roll 1d6 when an Adeptus Ministorum model flees, whilst this unit is within 6 inches of any friendly models of this ability, and on 4 up, they do not flee. The problem here, in a lot of ways with this guy, now the good news is that your battle sisters and everybody else, they are Adeptus Ministorum. They do have that keyword, so you can boost your attacks, you can boost, or rather you can prevent them from running away. So this guy's giving you some buffs and some decent buffs, but he himself doesn't do shit. I would not put him in any fight in any capacity if you can goddamn help it. Because he'll just fold like a wet paper bag immediately. Not exactly the world's most impressive unit. Now, one important thing to mention here, too, is that he does have the keyword Ministorum Priest. And with matched play, the Priestly Delegation Rule, this is on a separate page, this is on page 100, under the Sisterhood at War. A detachment that does not include any Ministorum Priests can only include 1 Ecclesiarchy Battle Conclave unit. As far as things that are Battle Conclave, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, that is just your Death Cult Assassins, your Arcoflagellants, Crusaders. I don't think anybody else is. Just double checking here again. I'm pretty certain that nobody else is. Yeah, no, it's just those 3 units. Which, good news, you're probably not going to take a whole lot of those anyways, because compared to the rest of the book, at least in my opinion, they kind of suck. Or at least you have better options, in my opinion, in comparison. So, I think overall, depending on what you're building for and stuff, I think a missionary is going to be a must take, just for your, the buffs, adding one to the attacks characteristic for anybody within 6 inches out of him, being able to prevent models from fleeing, which you're probably not going to run into too terribly often anyways, but, it's still good to have. So he's going to help you shore up a little bit of your defenses buff-wise. So I would say in those ways, he's a must-take. If you're taking him to be a beat stick, he is a mistake. Get it? Must-take versus mistake. Eh, fuck it. Anywho. But yeah, he's a good choice there in those terms for those boosts. Now, that being said, they do have... Let's see here. I'm just checking the time here. We got a little bit of time, so we'll go over a few more things of interest. But they do have, in the elite section, they do have a preacher that is a single model equipped with las pistol and chainsword. He's kind of like a diet missionary. He still has the war hymns ability, just the same. He's got the four-up invuln. He's got the zealot ability. He's not armed with as much shit. Stats line is pretty much, I think it is actually the exact same. But he also has the icon of the Ecclesiarchy. Whilst any preacher units from your army are within 6 inches of any enemy chaos units, you subtract 1 from the leadership characteristic of those enemy units. I would say overall, unless you are, you know, definitely looking to spread the wealth on the War Hymns ability specifically, you know, stick with the missionary. And forget about the preacher. Although if you wanted to go cheap on shit, you could go the other way around, take a preacher and forget the missionary. Because he still has the ministorum priest rule. So as long as he's in a detachment, you're not limited on your number of Ecclesiarchy battle conclave units. But once again, battle conclave units aren't that great, in my opinion. Now, this is all also, too, I've not gone over stratagems yet. I'll probably won't get to that stuff today. Probably do that in a in the next episode. But yeah, he's definitely, you know, if you want to make sure you got War Hymns more widely available, then he may be worth taking. For those purposes, I don't remember if we went over how many points he was. Yeah, I think I did mention that he's 30 points. I'm just losing my marbles a little bit. So he's 8 points cheaper than a missionary. But, you know, once again, it just kind of depends on where are you putting these things and for what purpose. On whether or not you're going to want to bother with him or not. Or bring a bunch of him or not. Otherwise, overall, he's just not that fucking crazy... capable. And once again, not that the missionary is either, but I just don't foresee any reason to do both, short of, once again, wanting War Hymns spread out throughout the whole goddamn place. Now, here's one thing, though, that I find rather interesting, too. I saw this before in the Relics of the Ecclesiarchy. There's the Book of St. Lucius relic adds 3 inches to the range of the aura abilities of a model with this relic. To my understanding, let's see, if your army's led by an Adeptus Sororitas warlord, then before the battle, may give one of the following relics of the Ecclesiarchy to an Adeptus Sororitas character model. If your army includes any ministorum priests, you can instead give one of them the Book of St. Lucius. Okay, so I'm going to say that the way that's worded is that ministorum priests can't access any of the other relics. You can't give them Martyr's Vengeance or, well, that's specific to an order. But you couldn't give one like the Iron Surplice of St. Estela or anything like that. It's, The only relic they have access to is the Book of St. Lucius, which does add 3 inches to the range of their aura abilities. So, if you got the missionary, and unless you need a different relic for a different purpose, that wouldn't necessarily be a terrible choice. A missionary with the Book of St. Lucius, giving him 9 inches on the add one to the attacks characteristic, and 9 inches on the preventing a flee. That being said, too, all that stuff, you know, cool, buffs, buffs, buffs. But if you're not planning to get into combat, and you're going to do everything in your fucking power to stay out of combat, and if you get into combat, you're just going to fall back out of it, and you don't really care about it, and so on and so forth, maybe this guy's not very useful to you. But I think any time you can add extra attacks is good, personally. So, next up here, we already started working on the elite section, so we'll just go ahead and just kind of tear through this elite section a little bit more. There's a lot of elites, though. A lot of elites. In fact, now that I'm looking at it, I'm like, oof, there's several pages of elites. You know what? I think we're going to save the elite section for next week's episode instead. Because at first I was like, you know, we already started. Let's get to it. You know what? We'll just go ahead and go over the Battle Sisters. And then I think we will probably call this episode here for now. Your Battle Sister squad is the only troops choice in the entire book. It would have been nice, I think, for them to provide a kind of, you know, a faithful cultist, option, you know, basically the reverse of the Chaos Cultist, you know, just a super stupidly cheap, you know, torch and pitchforks, just sort of unit, you know, that's just a bunch of dudes and you know, that are just super faithful, and they're just running out into the battlefield wearing nothing but their robes and wielding whatever weapons they get their hands on and shit. That to me, I feel like would have been thematic and provided, you know, a good cheap troops unit. As far as the cost of Battle Sisters go, they're 5 to 15 models per unit. They are 9 points per model, not including war gear. Their standard war gear is bolt pistol, bolt gun, frag grenades, and crack grenades, which all that shit is free to my understanding. Yes. So they're 9 points apiece. And they come with 5 Battle Sisters by default. And like I said, can be up to an additional 10 in total. So 15 Battle Sisters tops in the squad. You can have one Battle Sister equipped with one weapon for the special weapons list instead of a bolt gun. One can be equipped with one of the following instead of a bolt gun, a heavy weapon, or a special weapon. One Battle Sister equipped with the bolt gun can have a Simulacrum Imperialis. The Sister Spear, can additionally be equipped with one weapon from the melee weapons list, or could be equipped with one weapon from the melee weapons list instead of one bolt gun. Maybe additionally equipped. Oh, okay. So you can give her the melee weapon additionally, or you can swap out the bolt gun for a different melee weapon. Okay, I think I get what that's saying. It's kind of, why would you just throw on an extra weapon for the fun of it when you can't use them all otherwise? Bolt pistol, bolt gun, frag. Okay, so she doesn't have a melee weapon by default. Okay. Gotcha. Alright. So, but you could dually fucking melee weapons, maybe, if you wanted. Yeah, the way it's worded here, or can be equipped with instead of one bolt gun. Oh, that is really bizarre, though. Like, why? I don't quite get why you would do that. The bolt pistol and bolt gun are already free, so you could either add a melee weapon, so you have a melee weapon, bolt pistol, bolt gun, or you could swap out the bolt gun, so you have a bolt pistol and melee weapon. I don't understand, unless I'm reading something wrong here. The Sister Superior can be equipped with one weapon from the range weapons list instead of one bolt gun. Can be equipped with one weapon from the pistols list instead of one bolt pistol. Okay. And they can have an Incensor Cherub. They have the Acts of Faith, Sacred Rites, and Shield of Faith abilities. Stats-wise, 4 up weapon skill, 3 up ballistic skill, strength 3, toughness 3, 1 wound, 1 attack. Sister Superior has 2, leadership 7, Superior has 8, and then a 3 up armor save with the Shield of Faith ability, giving them a 6 up invul. They have 6 inch movement. Then they have the abilities, once again, Axe Faith, Sacred Rites, Shield of Faith. And they have, if you have them equipped with a Simulacrum Imperialis, if a model in this unit has the Simulacrum Imperialis, then once per phase, you can perform one act of faith for this unit, even if you've already performed one or more acts of faith in that phase. So you can spend the miracle dice. Yes. Yeah. So you can spend miracle dice even if you've already done so, once per phase. So if you have multiple units that have the Simulacrum, I think you can still, it's just once per squad, to my understanding. Yeah, one or more acts of faith in that phase. Yeah, so you could, if you have multiple Simulacrums across multiple squads, they can each do an act of faith even if somebody else has already done so. The Simulacrum is an extra 5 points. And then we have the Incensor Cherub, which is also 5 points. And the Incensor Cherub, they have one, once per battle at the beginning of any phase, that Incensor Cherub can intercede. If it does, it's removed from play, and you gain 1 miracle dice. You roll 2d6 when you do so, and you select which one of those you want to keep. That miracle dice you gain can only be used to perform an act of faith for this unit, and only in that phase. At the end of the phase, if the dice has not been used, it is lost. There is a model for it, but it doesn't count as a model for any rules purposes in any capacity. And it has to stay within coherency. But once again, does not count as a model for rules purposes, period. Overall, I feel like the Humble Battle Sister is definitely capable. She's no goddamn Primaris Marine, that's for certain. But being able to manipulate your use of Miracle Dice even further beyond just getting Miracle Dice in the first place is pretty impressive. Being able to do multiple acts of faith, not within the same squad, but being able to say, well, I already did it over here, but I'm doing it again over here. Worst case scenario, you need to take a gamble. You can go for some extra miracle dice by using that cherub. And then they can be equipped with all sorts of additional weapons. You're looking at a maximum of 2 special weapons or 1 special, 1 heavy weapon. And then you've got what your sister superior can be equipped with. Which, once again, the wording on that melee weapon one is weird to me. That I don't get why you would say, replace my bolt gun with this so I have just the bolt pistol and this, when you also have the option for free to take bolt gun, bolt pistol, and the melee weapon on top of it. I just do not understand that. I think that's going to be about it for today's episode. So we're definitely going to have to get through a bunch of fucking elites in the next episode, a bunch of elites, as well as a little bit of fast attack, a little bit of heavy support. My goal would be for the next episode, barring any sort of major news or whatever else, my goal, I might just do that as a longer episode and stuff too. My goal would be to try and finish out the book if possible, and go over the rest of the unit. So, but thank you guys for listening as always. If you want, you can check out the Facebook page, facebook.com/theregimentalvoxpodcast. You can hit me up on Twitter @regimentalvox. You can also donate through the Patreon, patreon.com/theregimentalvox. Every little bit helps. Currently I believe I am making a grand total of $0 a month. And that's fine, but it definitely would be nice to get some funds flowing so that I can try to, once again, get some better equipment, get access to new rule books and stuff quicker. And I'd like to also work on some new content stuff. You know, I'd like to be able to, you know, do some more video content and stuff too, be it painting stuff or battle reports, etc. Going to tournaments is one thing I'd really like to do too. So, but getting some equipment for the road is going to be even more expensive. So, but and actually, speaking of painting stuff too, obviously there's also Danger Close Painting Studio. If you need anything done up on the cheap, you can hit up my brother and I, facebook.com/DangerClosePaintingStudio. So, but I think that is it for this week, guys. Once again, thank you for listening. I will catch you all next week. This is Caleb Myers signing off for the evening. Have a wonderful week, everyone.